Thank you for downloading the Lancashire Mining Museum Mining Trail audio guide. This audio guide will give information at each stopping point and directions to the next point on the map. Once you have arrived at the starting point, please press play. After each direction, you will hear a long beep where you should press pause on your device. Once you have followed the directions, press play to hear information about the relevant point on the map. This will be followed by the next set of directions. Trail 3, Lee Collieries. Red Route. An approximately 1 hour circular walking cycling route of 2.8 miles or 4.5 kilometres involving some off-road footpaths. Allow extra time for sharing information at points of interest.
1. Lee Miners Welfare Institute Recreation and Social Club opened in 1957 at a cost of £60,000. Miners' institutes developed in the latter part of the 19th century to meet a need and demand for meeting places for self-education, union meetings and community recreation. They were originally funded by contributions from miners' wages, often with support from coal owners. The Mining Industry Act of 1920 raised a levy of 1 pence per tonne of coal produced to create the Miners' Welfare Fund, to provide amenities for miners such as pit head baths, scholarships and welfare halls and institutes. The annual Miners' Gala was a big event. Lee Miners was within walking distance of Parsonage Colliery, so the National Union of Mine Workers, the NUM, purchased the land, and the miners each bought a brick a week for one old penny. In 1977, Lee Miners boasted a 5,000-strong membership. When the pits closed, the NUM transferred all the land over to the Coal Industry Social Work Organisation, or CISWO, who oversaw the remaining 300 or so miners' welfares that remain around the country. Management committees are charged a peppercorn rent and are responsible for running the buildings and providing affordable spaces for community groups such as Lee Miners Rangers Rugby League Club, which formed in 1966. It remains one of only two sides never to have played outside the top division of the Amateur Games flagship league. Rugby league, like mining, is tough, physically demanding and relies heavily on teamwork, so it isn't surprising that so many mining areas produce successful teams. Miners had to be very disciplined and safety conscious underground, which may explain why the referees in rugby league have always received more respect than their counterparts in football, and why so many miners enjoyed the controlled aggression of rugby league after a hard shift. Local miners would also have access to the Lancashire and North Staffordshire Miners' Convalescent Home on the North Shore at Blackpool. The purpose-built building was opened by the Prince of Wales in 1925 and provided 132 beds and care for miners recovering from sickness and injury. Bungalows were later added so that miners' wives could stay with their convalescing husbands. The miners' home closed in 1987 following the long-term decline of the mining industry, and the building was sold and turned into private luxury apartments. Visit for refreshments and WC.
Leave the club, walk up Kirby Road and turn left along Twist Lane. Walk to the traffic lights and cross the A579 Atherley Way bypass to continue along Twist Lane. Stop at the top of Sanderson Street. Turn left into Sanderson Street and walk to the end, then take the footpath to the canal. Stop at the foot of the bridge.
2. To your left, Lee Bypass Road Bridge number 11A carries the A579 Atherley Way along the former route of Bolton and Lee Railway. The sides of the canal have been extended with concrete to create a narrow, a short length of canal with width room for only one boat.
Climb the steps and stop at the top of the bridge.
3. Springfield Footbridge number 10 is located at a pinch point, a traffic calming measure on what was once a very busy waterway. This was originally a wooden swing bridge, known locally as the Turning Bridge, which loaded coal via a staith, an elevated platform, at Springfield Basin.
cross the bridge and turn right on the towpath, away from the direction of Lee.
4. The land at the side of the canal is called the towpath, as it was originally used by horses to tow or pull boats along the canal. The inns and wharfs along the canal used to offer stables to accommodate the horses when the boats moored up, though not everyone could afford the fee for overnight stabling. Steam and diesel engines gradually replaced horsepower, but the last working horse boat only finished in 1960. The opposite side to the towpath is known as the offside bank. 5. The Leeds and Liverpool Canal is the longest single canal in Britain at 127.25 miles or 204 kilometres long. It was completed in 1816, creating a vital link between the Irish Sea and the North Sea for the transportation of coal and merchandise, particularly cotton. The Lee branch from Lee to Wigan was opened in 1820 to connect the Leeds and Liverpool with the Bridgewater Canal, providing navigation to Manchester for cargo and people. There were daily packet boats between Wigan and Liverpool via Manchester. The broad locks of the Leeds and Liverpool Canal enabled the use of short boats, cargo vessels which could carry around 45 tonnes, much more than narrow boats, and therefore more cost productive. This meant the canal could compete successfully with the railways and enabled it to escape closure, the fate of many UK canals in the 1960s, including the Manchester, Bolton and Bury Canal. The Leeds and Liverpool Canal was nationalised in 1948 and is now maintained by the Canal and River Trust. Glazebrook Aqueduct takes the Wesley Brook under the canal.
Continue along the canal towpath until you come to another pinch point without a bridge.
6. Worsley Bridge once stood here. It was nicknamed Dickie Barton's Bridge after the owner of Wesley Lodge, which once stood on the offside bank. Henry Worsley was, by all accounts, a terrible drunk and as unstable as his bridge, which succumbed to mining subsidence.
Continue along the canal towpath until you come to a set of large wooden steps.
7. If you climb up the large wooden steps and look across the flash, you can see the remains of the spit of land which used to carry the Bolton and Lee railway line across the water. Pennington Flash was created by mining subsidence around 1900. When the surrounding land sunk, the canal had to be built up some 20 to 30 feet to counter the effect. The track bed of the former railway line which used to pass over the canal is now below canal level.
Continue along the canal until you reach a footbridge.
8. Common Lane Footbridge No. 9 is another pinch point. It used to be a wooden swing bridge, known as Strange Common Bridge, which served Lower and Higher Allinson's farms before they were swallowed by the flash and buried by the coal rugs. Next to the footbridge was Wesley Basin, where coal trains from Wesley collieries emptied their loads into the canal barges via a staithe. Coal barges were generally wooden, with quite shallow sides, and had no combing or raised border around the hatch to keep the water out. This was so that the barge could pass easily under the coal loading chute.
Continue along the canal until you reach two wooden benches and a large wooden sculpture.
9. The two benches have Greenheart Northern Soul carved into them. Greenheart is a project to link up green spaces in the Wigan Borough, and Northern Soul refers to the popular music scene in Wigan. The unlocked sculpture was created by sculptor Thompson Dagnall, who said, "I aim to use the physical presence of the lock gates to stimulate each traveller's memories of the canals and hint at the vast library of tales yet to be unearthed." A little further along the canal you will see another pinch point without a bridge. Look at the offside bank. 10. William Green's Bridge led from Bickershaw Street, past the Bickershaw Colliery's engine shed and across the canal to a cricket pitch, which is thought to have belonged to Plank Lane Methodist Cricket Club. There was also in this area, according to one local resident, a target practice area for the Plank Lane Home Guard in World War II. The targets were fixed on wooden butts against the rooks and they fired from the canal towpath. We always snaked up canal and watched them pot shots. The air seemed it out. The Home Guard, Local Defence Volunteers, or LDV, Look, Duck, Vanish, operational from 1940 until 1944, were made up of local volunteers, otherwise ineligible for military service. This was usually due to their age, hence the nickname Dad's Army, but they acted as a secondary defence force in case of invasion. Units were affiliated to and administrated by their local Territorial Army Association, presumably the 25th Lee Battalion. Beyond the bridge, the former Ackers Whitley's Basin is remembered in the name of Ackers Fold, the row of houses closest to the canal. Ackers Whitley and Company developed the Bickershaw Collieries.
Continue along the canal until you near the end of the housing and the beginning of the marina. Stop and look at the offside bank. You may need to adjust your position to see the art installation opposite.
11. Shadows by Northwest artist Colin Spofforth was commissioned and installed by Taylor Wimpey as a memorial for the lives lost in the Bickershaw disaster on October 10, 1932. The artist was struck by how, despite the different and dangerous working conditions in the collieries, the earlier miners worked in their normal clothes and flat caps. The installation is constructed from a series of 3-metre-high vertical metal elements, which, when viewed from the canal or the marina, will combine to form an image of a coal miner, a ghost that appears and disappears as you pass by the memorial, a fleeting glimpse of a time and people long gone, a shadow of a once very real community who lived and worked in this place.
Leave the canal towpath via the path to the bridge. Stop and look left down Slag Lane.
12. Terraced houses used to stand either side of this stretch of Slag Lane. Howard Street, Windsor Road, Hindley Street and Boat Street provided housing and some shops for many miners and their families, but were demolished in the 1960s due to flooding and the poor quality of the buildings. Rumour has it is that Slag Lane was so named after the Byram Hall coach got stuck in mud and its residents arranged for coal slag to be spread on the dirt road.
Cross the bridge to Plank Lane and stop beside the marina.
13. Bickershaw Colliery once dominated this area. Ackers Whitley purchased land in Plank Lane because it already had coal wharves for loading the coal barges, and a new railway link between Wigan and Manchester was opening up markets in Liverpool and Manchester. Number 1 shaft was sunk in 1872 and number 2 shaft shortly afterwards, both working the Cromborg Pemberton 5 feet and the white and black seams. In 1881, number 3 and 4 shafts were completed to the King coal seam, and in 1907 number 5 shaft gave access to the Ince yard seam. This was deepened in 1921 to reach the Cromborg seam. In 1931, the newly named Bickershaw Collieries came under the chairmanship of Major Ernest Hart, MC, Military Cross. He was a fair but firm employer, and under his leadership and guidance, the colliery was extensively reorganised. He also made the Bickershaw Colliery Band into a prize-winning band, which was in constant demand for public concerts as well as recordings by the BBC. The number 3 and 4 shafts were deepened, opening up the Peacock, Plodder and Wigan seams, and new engines and buildings were installed, including a screening or coal sorting and coal cleaning plant. Pitbrow lasses were originally employed at the colliery to pick and sort the coal by hand. Although women and children had been banned from working underground since 1842, many men were still unhappy with them working at the surface. Manners and bad language were the main concerns, along with personal safety, neglect of their families and domestic duties, and, of course, the trousers that many Pitbrow lasses wore. In 1886, there were 1,623 women in Lancashire working on the Pitbrow, and they and others around the country successfully campaigned against a bill to stop them working at the collieries. Sadly, it wasn't a job without risks. In 1894, 15-year-old screener and coal sorter Anne Prescott accidentally fell down the steps from the screen and died of her injuries the following day. Following nationalisation of the industry, a further reorganisation scheme opened out two more faces for production, and until 1952, Bickershaw had five headgears. After the number five headgears were demolished and the shaft filled in, all production and coal winding was focused in the numbers three and four shafts, leaving numbers one and two shafts for ventilation purposes. In the 1970s, a £3 million development scheme created the North West's first super pit by linking Bickershaw's workings with those of Parsonage and Goulburn Collieries. 7 miles of underground conveyor belting transported the coal to Bickershaw. The nerve centre of the operation was ELSI, Electronic Lighting Signalling Indicating Equipment, which controlled the coal flow from eight widely separated faces and monitored underground conditions. However, the colliery was subject to geological problems, and the end of production was announced in early 1992, with the union officials declaring that it had been a political closure. The colliery featured in the ITV drama series Sam in 1973. Look across the road. 14. The pit canteen used to stand on the opposite side of Plank Lane. Numerous other buildings once stood either side of the road, including the Packet, the Grey Horse and the Red Brick Britannia pubs opposite the bridge. The coal from the Abram pits was transported by horse-drawn tramway, then by two steam locomotives, the Bee and the Wasp, to the canal at Plank Lane, where previously there had been a glassworks. The last cargo of coal transported along the Lee Branch was in August 1972, when road transport took over local distribution.
Continue along Plank Lane and turn right into Collier's Way, then walk across the green.
15. Wilkinson Park Drive is named after Alfred Wilkinson VC, Victoria Cross, who is commemorated by the life-size sculpture designed and created by tribute artist Andrew Burgess. It stands where one of the Bickershaw Colliery mining shafts used to be. It was donated by Taylor Wimpey, who built the housing estate, and unveiled by Wilkinson's granddaughter and nephew in 2018 to mark 100 years since he received his Victoria Cross. Wilkinson, who was born in Lee in 1896, won his VC for an act of bravery in World War I when he ran under shellfire to deliver an important message about reinforcements. Sadly, he died whilst working as a laboratory technician in the surveyor's laboratory at Bickershaw Colliery, killed by carbon monoxide fumes from a blocked chimney. On the morning of his death, he'd received a letter informing him that he'd been granted a commission in the Pioneer Corps. He was buried with full military honours at Lee Cemetery. Members of the Home Guard led the procession, followed by the Bickershaw Colliery Brass Band, members of the British Legion and the Special Constables. His VC and other medals are in the British Imperial War Museum. A plaque to his memory was unveiled in Lee Town Hall in 2005, and in 2021, street artists Kelso and Evan Barlow created an artwork in Twiss Lane featuring Wilkinson, in time for Remembrance Day.
Return to Collier's Way, then turn right onto Plank Lane. Continue along Plank Lane. Cross Felt House Drive and continue along Plank Lane. Stop opposite the entrance to Hayes Street on the opposite side of the road.
16. The houses opposite have a letter B at the end of their number. Plank Lane straddles the old town border, so these houses are in Abram, whilst the houses on the opposite side of the road are in Lee. Where you are standing is roughly the location of the entrance to Bickershaw Street, which marked the boundary to Bickershaw Colliery and led down to Greensbridge on the canal.
Continue along Plank Lane and stop opposite the Nevison.
17. The Nevison Inn was originally a farmhouse whose owner started to sell beer, but it became a fully licensed public house in 1916. In the 1930s, it was given the nickname of Owd Ned's after the licensee Edward Knowles, who always sported a trilby and clogs. The name is believed to have been inspired by the notorious 17th century highwayman John Nevison, or Swift Nick, but given that he operated east of the Pennines, it seems unlikely. Another pub, the Correction, used to stand opposite. Rumour has it that patrons would cross between the two, depending on the different licensing hours of Lee and Abram. Visit for refreshments and WC.
Continue along Plank Lane. Cross Johnson Close and Common Lane and stop at the top of Mitchell Street.
This area was once full of old terraced housing and some shops, most of which were demolished in the 60s and 70s as part of the slum clearances. Lee Town Council were given the power to purchase old and decaying houses and offer residents alternative accommodation, or give them the money to move on. Plank Lane Labour Club used to stand at the bottom of Mitchell Street, on the right-hand side where Richmond House Kerr Home now stands. It was originally a wooden hut, built as a young men's club, but became the Working Men's Club and later the Labour Club. It was replaced by a brick building in the 1930s and a bowling green was added later. It also had a rugby league team. Major Hart, the manager of Bickershaw Colliery, paid for the club to acquire a licence to serve beer, and in 1936, when he drew a horse on the Irish sweepstake, treated all the pitmen in the club to free ale. There was uproar when women were first allowed in, but they enjoyed the Saturday night bingo, played with slabs, which were metal plates with the numbers stamped on, probably made in the fitter's shop at the pit. Some of the profits went towards funding the club trips. There was an annual outing to Southport and a bonfire night treat at Lee Lane Park in Abram. This may have been the location of a fundraising match between Plank Lane and Plattbridge ladies' football teams in June 1921. The pea soup match attracted several thousand spectators and helped to support the Plank Lane Relief Fund for local miners who had been locked out of work by coal owners who wanted to increase working hours and reduce pay. The club featured in Series 4, Episode 1 of Second City First's Early to Bed by Alan Bleasdale, broadcast on the 20th of March 1975.
Continue along Plank Lane. Notice the name of the new development of housing, the Coal Windings. Cross Winwood Street, then cross Plank Lane at the corner where it bends to become Furze Lane. Turn left into Heath Lane, which once led to Wesley Heath and Heath Farm. Follow the lane to the gate. The land beyond was once farmland, but is now Bickershaw Country Park.
Bickershaw Country Park is a nature reserve between Bickershaw Village and West Lee, on the original Bickershaw Colliery site. During the 19th century, coal was worked from shallow workings in Bickershaw and Abram by the Bickershaw and Abram Coal Companies. In the 1840s, the Ackers Whitley Coal Company was formed to work reserves under the Bickershaw estate. The average outputs from the Bickershaw and Abram collieries was in the region of 1,000 tonnes per week. But as the reserves of coal diminished, the company decided to sink new, deeper shafts at Plank Lane. This was made possible with the advent of bigger and better steam engines. The reclaimed colliery land is now a haven for wildlife, with extensive grasslands, woodland, scrubland and water and wetland areas. Diggle's Flash is named after Jimmy Diggle, who owned Hayfield Pit. In 1866 there was an outbreak of foot and mouth disease, so Diggle took his herd of 26 cows to the bottom of his pit to keep them safe from infection. He was a popular and humanitarian figure, known for his great kindness to his employees and his support for local Methodist churches. The Willow Tree Inn, or Last Shift, stood just beyond Wesley Heath Farm, though no trace of it remains. It was originally a farm, but by 1891 it had become an inn, which was popular with miners returning from the Higher Hall Hayfield and Lower Hall pits, hence its Last Shift nickname. The miners' wives would wait outside on payday to get their housekeeping before it was spent on beer. In the 1960s, the pub was very popular with local mods, but it was derelict by 1975 and demolished in the 1980s.
Retrace your steps up Heath Lane and turn left onto Furze Lane. Continue along Furze Lane, cross Walter Street, May Street and Grace Street. Stop outside 212 Furze Lane.
20. Here lived Walter Nelson, a married man who was only 30 years old when he was killed in the 1932 disaster at Bickershaw Colliery. On the 10th of October, the day shift winding engine man, John Ernest Hitchin, arrived to take over from the night engine man. At 5:55 a.m. the buzzer sounded, and the banks man, the person in charge of the shaft and cage at the surface of a colliery, signalled that he was ready to descend, and the cage was loaded with 20 men and lowered. Shortly after, there was what a woman who lived opposite the colliery described as a sort of crashing sound like thunder. We rushed out of our houses as soon as we heard it. The onsetter, the person in charge of loading and unloading of cages at the pit bottom or eye, down below said that the descending cage passed at a tremendous speed, crashing 630 feet down into the water in the shaft sump. He heard cries from the shaft, and on looking down saw a face in the water. Only one man in the descending cage escaped. James Sharp, 47, was the last man to enter, so he was near a gate, which he managed to lift. He suffered broken bones and head injuries and lived with disabilities for the rest of his life. The other 19 men drowned. Between them, they left around 70 persons without a breadwinner. 15 of the 19 were buried at Lee Cemetery in one funeral service. 2,000 miners marched from Plank Lane at the head of the cortege. The King sent a message of sympathy, and the Mayor of Lee's Relief Fund raised over £2,000 for the families of the victims. At the inquest, the jury found that the wrong lever had been applied, and that the cage had passed the point at which the visor, an automatic device to prevent overwinding, was set. The source of the accident was an error of judgment by the engine man. As a result, the visor controller at the colliery was immediately altered.
Continue along Furze Lane, cross Faith Street and Charity Street, and stop outside the Fir Tree Inn.
21. The Fir Tree Inn is the centre for most of the fishing activities in Lee, a popular pastime of miners and other working class men. On the 1939 register, the landlord was John Henry Wright, who was born in Dalton-in-Furness in 1873. After working in the iron ore mines from the age of 10, he moved to Lee and started work as a drawer at Bedford Collieries. He worked there for 3 years, but after being buried by a large fall of rock, miraculously suffering only scratches and bruises, he went to work at the Albion Foundry. He stayed for 26 years before becoming licensed victualler at the Bowling Green Inn in West Lee. He worked for the Liberal Party until the formation of the Labour Party, and as Mayor of Lee in 1923 supported many charitable institutions and inaugurated the first Blind People's Trust. During his 13 years service on the Town Council, he was also chair of the Fire Brigade when it changed from horse machines to motor engines. Visit for refreshments and WC.
Continue along Furze Lane and cross Lee Street. Stop near the zebra crossing.
22. The mineral line from West Lee Collieries, Higher Hall and Lower Hall pits, which was a tramway, then later a railway, used to run alongside Furze Mills and crossed Furze Lane between Nangreed Street and Lee Street, then travelled across farmland to West Lee Basin on the Leeds and Liverpool Canal.
Cross Nangreed Street and stop at the end of Malham Close.
23. This was the location of the Furze Maternity Home, which was formerly the home of Sir George Holden, Mayor of Lee, 1920 to 1922, who owned the Furze and Tunnicliffe's mills. His father, Sir John Holden, gave Furze Park to the town. After the Holdens left the Furze, the council acquired it in 1931 and converted it into a maternity home. It stopped delivering babies in 1979, but stayed open for recovering mothers until 1985. It was later demolished and there are now houses on the site. You were not considered to be a true Lather unless you were born at the Furze.
Cross Malham Close and continue along Furze Lane. Stop outside the church.
24. St. Peter's Anglican Church was consecrated in 1881. It was designed by Paley and Austin, architects of Lancaster, and has been designated by English Heritage as a Grade 2 listed building, which means that it is judged to be of particular national importance or special interest. The war memorial features the names of miners from Parsonage Colliery who died during World War I, Sam Hill and P. Unsworth. In 1992, there was a funeral march to commemorate the closure of Bickershaw Colliery. 500 miners walked from the colliery to Lee Miners Welfare Institute, stopping at the church for a short open-air service. The Reverend Ray Cook and Lancashire Miners leader, Roy Jackson, recorded the final chapter as Old King Coal was laid to rest. The victims of mining tragedies were remembered, then they followed Goulburn Volek's band to a farewell wake at the Welfare Institute.
Continue along First Lane to the entrance to the park.
25. First Park, which opened in 1921, provided a green lung and pleasure ground for local people, particularly the working classes. It was created on the site of a former brick field adjoining Furze Mills. The land was donated by Sir John Holden of the Furze and his fellow co-directors of Messrs Tunnicliffe and Hampson Limited, Cotton Spinners. It contained a boating lake, bowling green, pavilion, two tennis courts, a bandstand, a terrace garden and a playground.
Continue along Furze Lane. Note the Spinners' Arms, a reminder of another key industry in Lee and surrounding area. Cross Owen Street and stop outside the large building in the next block, number 28.
26. The Collier's Rest Pub opened in 1908 as a beer house. Under the Beer Act of 1830, beer houses were only allowed to sell beer and cider and had shorter trading hours. It later became a fully licensed public house with its own football and cricket teams. Like many pubs in the area, it was named after a key industry, and being located between two collieries was no doubt a resting point for many a miner on their way home after finishing their shift.
Continue along Furze Lane. Cross Harry's Court and Wigan Road at the roundabout and continue along Twist Lane. Stop at Westley Bridge.
27. Westley Brook once powered Westley Corn Cotton Mill, which stood on the corner of Twist Lane and Wigan Road. The corn mill dated from at least 1544. In 1829, a steam engine was installed, and the mill later turned to cotton spinning until it was demolished in 1896. Note the rows of terraced houses, which would have been home to many local miners. The closure of the collieries had a devastating impact on communities. If you were to combine all the former coal fields across England, Wales and Scotland, it would still be the most deprived region in the UK. In 1999, the Labour government launched the Coalfields Task Force, which led to the establishment of the Coalfield Regeneration Trust. This independent charity targets programmes to improve the health, skills and employment of those living in former coalfield areas, which still face significant challenges. The terraced houses were rehabilitated using grant aid from the Coalfield Regeneration Trust, Wigan Council and Urban Housing Renewal Initiatives.
Continue along Twist Lane and stop at the top of Knowsley Street.
28. The Mineral Railway Line, which used to transport coal from Parsonage Colliery to the coal wharf on the Leeds and Liverpool Canal, crossed Twist Lane here. You can see how the angle of the line is still clear in the shape of the house on the corner opposite.
Turn left into Knowsley Street and stop. The street used to lead down to the colliery.
1. Parsonage Colliery used to cover all of this area. It was sunk on derelict land that was previously Barton's Chemical Works, but was named after the Westley Township Parsonage, which originally owned it. There have been drift mines in Westley since the 12th century, but during the second half of the 19th century, it became possible to mine the deeper seams, and coal became an important industry in Lee. Parsonage was the last pit to be sunk in the area, but became one of the deepest in the country, its shafts to the early mine going down over 3,000 feet or 900 metres. Sinking began in 1913 but was halted by World War I. Coal mining was one of several occupations which were scheduled as vital for war work, so these workers were given an on-war service 1915 badge so that they wouldn't get targeted as cowards. But when conscription came in 1916, many miners enlisted voluntarily. Out of 1,657 men employed by the Wigan Coal and Iron Company, 688 went to fight, and each was promised work on his return. However, 81 men were killed, and a further 118 wounded. Parsonage lost 8 men, Pat Kane, J. Carroll, James T. Cox, Sam Hill, James Hogan, Reuben Such, J. Swindells and P. Unsworth. The solid bronze memorial plaque dedicated to them is now in Lee Library. Ironically, the oldest pit rucks associated with the site, long since swallowed by Jackson's clay hole, were called the German rucks, possibly because some of the German POWs from the camp at Etherston Street were involved in their tipping. Coal was first wound to the surface at Parsonage in 1921. Steam power was supplied by 12 Lancashire boilers. Ventilation was particularly important as the temperature reached 118 degrees Fahrenheit in some workings. Miners were given salt water as they could lose up to 7 pounds in weight by sweating each day. Output increased rapidly from 1,044 tonnes in 1921 to 325,000 tonnes by 1930. But because the pit was so close to the town centre, large pillars of coal had to be left underneath the parish church and other large buildings. Parsonage pit baths opened in 1930. The Coal Miners Act of 1911 ruled that coal owners must provide pit head baths if a ballot of the workforce showed that they were wanted. There were 1,050 clean and dirty lockers and 74 bathing cubicles, each with a spray supplying cold, tepid and hot water. Mr. G. Rowson, MP for Farnworth, said that he was prepared to leave the question as to the whether the baths should be used to the women folk. If the man came home with pit dirt, she would not let him have his dinner or go to bed until he had been back and washed. The baths would assist the miners in placing a higher value on themselves. Women's baths were added in 1933, when it was noted that coal dust only becomes dirt if they take it away from the colliery. Previously inaccessible coal seams were accessed in the 1960s with the driving of the Horizon Tunnel, and the colliery was subsequently linked underground to Goulburn and Bickershaw collieries to become a super pit. Coal winding ceased in 1976 and the colliery closed in 1992.
Cross Knowsley Street and continue along Twist Lane. Cross Kersley Street, then cross Twist Lane at the traffic lights. Walk along Twist Lane, then cross Atherley Way at the traffic lights and walk along Twist Lane. Turn right into Kirby Road and return to the Lee Miners Welfare Institute Recreation and Social Club. This is the end of the Red Route.